वते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं त्वं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च नमा ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे नमो महावदन्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्या नामने गौरत्विषये नमः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी ऋषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुर्भ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे सर्वशास्त्राब्धि पीयूष सर्ववेदैक सत्फल सर्वसिद्धांत रत्नाढ्य सर्वलोकैक दृक्प्रद सर्वभागवत प्राण श्रीमद्भागवतं प्रभो कलिध्वान्तोदितादित्य श्रीकृष्ण परिवर्तित
Reading from Canto 11, Chapter 12, Text 17.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Sa Esha Jivo Vivara Prasuti Pranena Ghoshena Guham Pravishtah Manomayam Sukshmam Upetya Rupam मात्रा स्वरो वर्ण इति स्थविष्ठः श्री भगवान उवाच स एष जीवो विवर प्रसूति प्राणेन घोषेण गुहां प्रविष्टः मनोमयं सूक्ष्ममुपेत्य रूपम् मात्रा स्वरो वर्ण इति स्थविष्ठः श्रीभगवानुवाच स एष जीवो विवर प्रसूति प्राणेन घोषेण गुहां प्रविष्टः మనోమయం సూక్ష్మముపేత్య రూపం మాత్రా స్వరో వర్ణ ఇతి స్థవిష్ఠః. జీవో వివర ప్రసూతి రాయేన ఘోషేన గుహాం ప్రవిష్టః మనోమయం సూక్ష్మముపేత్య రూపం మాత్రా స్వరో వర్ణ ఇతి ప్రవిష్టః.
మాతాజీస్, శ్రీ భగవాన్ ఉవాచ, ద సుప్రీం పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ హడ్ సెడ్, సహ ఏషః హి హింసెల్ఫ్ జీవః, ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ హూ గివ్స్ లైఫ్ టు ఆల్, వివర విత్ ఇన్ ది హార్ట్, ప్రసూతిః మానిఫెస్ట్ ప్రాణేన అలాంగ్ విత్ ద లైఫ్ ఎయిర్, ఘోషేణ with the subtle manifestation of sound, guham, the heart, pravishtah, who has entered, manah mayam, pursued by the mind, or controlling the mind, even of great demigods like Lord Shiva, sukshmam, subtle, upetya, being situated in, రూపం ద ఫామ్ మాత్ర ద డిఫరెంట్ వొకాలిక్ లెన్స్ స్వర ద డిఫరెంట్ ఇంటోనేషన్స్ వర్ణ ద డిఫరెంట్ సౌండ్స్ ఆఫ్ ది ఆల్ఫాబెట్ ఇతి దస్ స్థవిష్ట ద గ్రాస్ ఫామ్ ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై ద డిసైపుల్స్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఏసీ భక్తివేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్. The Supreme Personality of God had said, My dear Uddhav, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in his subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, even great demigods like Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations. I'm reading the second part of this purport, beginning from second paragraph. Lord Krishna became manifest from the mouth of Lord Brahma in the form of the Vedas. The word vivara prasuti in this verse also indicates that the Lord is manifest within the adhara adi chakras situated within the body of Lord Brahma. The word ghoshena means subtle sound, And Guham Pravishtaha also indicates that Lord Krishna enters within the Adhar Chakra. The Lord can further be perceived within other chakras, such as the Mani Purak Chakra, located around the navel, and the Vishuddhi Chakra. The Sanskrit alphabet is composed of short and long vowels and consonants pronounced with high and low tones. And utilizing these vibrations, the different branches of Vedic literatures are manifested as a gross form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Bhagavad Gita, such literatures deal mostly with the three modes of material nature. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhava Arjuna. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that due to the control of the illusory energy, Maya, the personality of Godhead appears to the conditioned souls as part of the material universe. The imagined imposition of gross and subtle material qualities on the personality of Godhead is called avidya or ignorance. And through such ignorance, the living entity considers himself to be the doer of his own activities and becomes bound up in the network of karma. The Vedas therefore order an entangled soul to observe positive and negative injunctions to purify his existence. These procedures are called Pravritti Marg, or the path of regulated fruitive activities. When one has purified one's existence, one gives up this gross stage of fruitive activities because it is detrimental to the practice of pure devotional service. By firm faith, one may then worship the personality of Godhead. One who has developed perfect Krishna consciousness no longer has to perform ritualistic duties. As is stated in the Gita, Tasya Karyam Na Vidyate. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, this verse may be understood in another way. The word Jiva indicates Lord Krishna, who gives life to the residents of Vrindavan, and Vivara Prasuti indicates that although Lord Krishna eternally performs his pastimes in the spiritual world, beyond the vision of the conditioned souls, he also enters within the material universe to display the same pastimes. The words Guham Pravishtaha indicates that after displaying such pastimes, the Lord withdraws them and enters into his unmanifest pastimes, or those pastimes not manifest to the conditioned souls. In this case, Matra indicates the transcendental senses of the Lord, Swara indicates the Lord's transcendental sound vibration and singing, and the word Varna indicates the transcendental form of the Lord. The word Sthavishta or gross manifestation means that the Lord becomes manifest in the material world even to those devotees who are not completely advanced in Krishna consciousness and whose vision is not completely purified. Manomaya indicates that somehow or other Lord Krishna is to be kept within one's mind, and for the non-devotees, Lord Krishna is sukshma or most subtle because he cannot be known. Thus different acharyas have glorified Lord Krishna in different ways through the transcendental sound vibration of this verse. So, thank you all very much for coming this morning and discussing this purport. So, it's a little technical purport with a lot of technical words being utilized. So, I was wondering what should I speak on. Earlier, I was supposed to speak on the first part of the purport, but then a few days back, the thing got swapped. So, I'll make an attempt. If I sound too technical, please pardon me. So I'm going to make an attempt here to focus on this one line of the verse, Pranena Ghoshena Guham Pravishtaha. So I make an attempt here to divide my presentation in three parts, where I'll give some information about what is this concept of the chakras. Chakra ka chakra kya hai? Then, what is the conception of sound? And then how does these two coming together liberate a jiva from the material existence? So that's the kind of thing I attempt to make here. So background of this verse is Uddhav ji is confused after Krishna has given a very elaborate description of how different kind of jivas can be delivered from this material existence. Karma, jnana, varnashram, this, that, so many things. And he's like confused about what he should supposed to do. So then Krishna begins to explain again. And this whole series of verses will conclude with the end of this chapter where Krishna will recommend Uddhav ji to perform devotional service under the instructions of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is his manifestation, as well as the Vedic scriptures are his manifestation. So he is giving him confidence to follow the Vedic scriptures. So herein the Lord begins to explain the process of manifesting the Vedas through Lord Brahma. He's basically explained how does that happen. How exactly the Vedas, you know, he's going into the nitty gritty, the manufacturing process. Like Srinivas Prabhu, Raghuraj Prabhu explains you how exactly veg kolhapuri is made. So he's going into those details about how first vegetables are purchased and then Radhika Prem Prabhu supplies them. Spices and ingredients and this and that, and then finally there is so many things and ultimately comes to your plate. So he's saying Lord manifests in the Mooladhar Chakra of Lord Brahma and then rises up through prana and subtle sound called Paravak to grosser manifestations of sound till it reaches Vaikari Vak, and that's what we hear in the Vedas. That's what then Brahma takes these Vedic sounds and does creation. So what are these seven chakras and how do they affect us? So I was once reading this. You can find the details of it in ISKCON Health Newsletter 1995. It's an article written by Padmanabh Prabhu and where he explains this concept of chakra. I will not go into details and I'm definitely not an expert. But just that this information was a little interesting. So I'm just sharing here with devotees. So chakras are basically connection between the subtle and the gross bodies. You have the subtle and the gross body. The interface between your subtle body, which is Man, Buddhi, Ahankar, and the gross body, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether. The interface is actually prana. And the channel which regulates this prana is the chakras. So these are like sequential seven rings in your body, beginning from the tail of the spine. Right? So these are basically, they say, they are energy centers which accept prana and distribute it to different parts of the body. And each chakra also is connected to a person's psychological and emotional characteristics. Apart from his physical well-being, these various chakras also affect their psychological behavioral patterns. So if a chakra functions properly, then the organs connected with it, right? Because there is a whole science called chakra healing, where each chakra is connected to various kinds of body organs and diseases. And they basically track it down like that. So if it is functioning properly, then the organs receive prana properly and they stay healthy. So that is the whole idea of chakra healing. And if it doesn't function properly, then there will be disturbances or blockages in some progress, or the person's growth will be impeded psychologically, physically in a certain manner. And at birth, they say the chakras are open. They're all open. They're like conduits. They're all open. They're ready to accept prana growth. And then various occurrences in our life influence the functioning of chakra throughout our lives. It actually can affect us. So they say when healthy, chakras spin in a clockwise direction, drawing energy from the universal energy field to continuously revitalize you. And since they spin at different speeds, there are the different frequencies that they emit. So if somebody was to see your body with a chakra vision, they will see a sequence of those seven different colored rings. Right? And I think the lowest frequency emission is red. Okay? And the highest is, I believe, indigo, if I'm not wrong. Violet. So violet. So the top, your Sahasrara chakra is violet in color and the bottom one is red in color. Life is quite colorful actually. It's not that bad. So I'm going to speak about, I'll just share something. What does it do? What happens if it gets disturbed? And what you can do to ensure that it functions properly. Of course, they say that if a chakra gets closed, it's very difficult to open it. If a chakra gets closed, it's very difficult to open it by some normal ways and means. So first is this Mooladhar Chakra, which is at the tailbone at the bottom of the spine. And what disturbs this basically controls the survival reaction. Actually, I wanted to put a PPT, but I didn't have time to put it across. But if somebody wants details, I can share with you later on. But it controls the survival reactions. And what disturbs this chakra is feeling of insecurity.
when a being is growing up in a feeling of insecurity, this chakra tends to close down. So if you want this to open up once again, you have to provide an environment of security. And the consequence of this disturbance in the behavioral patterns is the person becomes a person with a very negative attitude in life. Psychologically, he develops a very negative attitude in life, and that severely reduces his energy and makes him selfish or aggressive. Just because he has been brought up in an environment of insecurity, that brings out this kind of things. And then the experts say that people experience loneliness, lack of confidence, indecisive, depressed, addictions, phobias, obsessions, all because of this one thing getting clogged up. And there are some physical symptoms also. I'll not go into that detail. Otherwise, it will become a medical class. Then there is a Swadhisthana chakra, which is below the navel, and it deals with pleasure and sensual experiences. And this gets disturbed for children who don't grow in an environment of affection. So, children who had much physical contact with their parents, and especially with their mothers, they have this chakra very healthy. And if it is disturbed, then tend to go to extreme. Either they crave for physical contact in the form of sexual experience, or they abhor that whole thing. Either they become totally negative, or they become totally obsessed by it, for people who have this chakra being in a disturbed manner. So this also, I was reading some stuff, and they say this also deals with eating disorders. If this chakra is a little clogged up, then this also leads to eating disorders. So this type of person, they say, if they have to help with this, this type of person needs to try to please others without concern of their reciprocation. Basically, ahetuki seva is what actually starts opening your Swadhisthana chakra, which is right below the navel. Then there is third is a Manipurak chakra, which is slightly above the navel. And this chakra determines how children develop their desire for power and control. Because a lot of our personality is formed when we are kids. Nothing much can be changed now, but it can be purified. So it determines how children develop their desires for power and control. And this article said the key to balance this chakra is to learn to depend on Krishna and be satisfied with what you have received. Because if this chakra goes imbalanced, then such people are not satisfied with their situation. And they think that by expanding their power and control, they can increase their satisfaction. That is the, generally have these kind of. So either such people, when children, they actually grow in an environment of excessive control, where they are not allowed to make their own decisions, where they are not allowed to use their intelligence, this is where this chakra starts getting clogged up. And he either develops a cowardly mentality or he becomes excessive controllership mentality. He can go to either ways. He becomes very indecisive, or he wants everyone to accept his opinion only. So that is what happens if this chakra gets clogged up. Then the fourth is Anahata, which is middle of the chest. And it is connected with relationships. So children who are brought up in a situation and an environment of broken families, or people where they had seen a lot of fights and disagreements and confusions and conflict between the parents, so this chakra tends to get closed up. Their heart closes. And this is interesting because these people tend to become faithless and have very great difficulty in accepting somebody as an authority, as a figure of, love and grace. So the experts say because this heart chakra is connected with motherly affection, these people need to learn how to play the role of mother, regardless of their gender. Whoever they are, they have to start showing affection. So when you start showing affection, this, your relationships start, you start experiencing security in relationships. And they say that also leads to
the qualities of forgiveness, faithfulness, hope, trust, all these things start coming up in the being of a personality. Then the Vishuddha Chakra, this is the fifth one, right? Vishuddha Chakra, it is at the bottom of the neck area of thyroid gland, they say. And this is connected with one's opinions, communication and speech. And children who grow up thinking that they should not have their own opinions are the one who gets disturbed in this particular aspect of chakra. Or kids who are overloved, that means the mother just loves them so much that they don't allow them to take any opinion, any kind of decisions, or they're not allowed to form any opinion. These kind of things happen. So they say that after the fifth year especially, children should be encouraged to have their own opinions, although the parents may try to guide them in a very, you know, protective manner. So when this fifth chakra closes up, we either don't say what we think, or we develop the attitude that everyone should just listen to me and accept my opinion without questions. So this is what happens if your Vishuddha chakra gets blocked. The sixth is Agya, which is indigo color. It is middle of forehead, slightly above the eyebrow. And it is connected with insight and philosophical understanding. Now, for children, this chakra is connected with fantasy. And if, as children growing up, their fantasy is curbed, then as they grow up, they have difficulty grasping deeper philosophical concepts. Even to the extent they will have difficulty understanding and believing anything which they can't see, because they have not, their ability to fantasize things have not gone. And this, like example, is a small child comes up with a paper flower up to his father and he says, "Papa, smell it, isn't it so nice?" And the father says, "Hey, it's just a paper flower." We actually killed his fantasy. They probably should smell and actually give a compliment. You might be creating a child who will believe in God in future. Right? So, this is what happens. So, when in childhood one's fantasies are denied, so it becomes difficult for them to, and they actually become, grow up to be scientists in a negative sense of the term. That means they just don't believe in anything unless they see it. They can't imagine. Now the last is the Sahasrara chakra, violet, which is on the top of the head, that relates to God consciousness, self-realization, universal thinking, compassion without sentimentality, all these kind of things. And people whose this chakra is open, they can be very accommodative. They can be giving out love, compassion, and accepting people won't be a big issue for them. So it depends on other chakras for it to function properly before it develops at all. The sixth chakra should function properly for this chakra to actually open up. And if it is not, then it leads to loss of faith, depression, confusion, all of these things. So these are the seven chakras which is right in our system, right in our body. So this is what that paper presented. So I'm just presenting some aspects of it. And they say that the strength or the efficiency of the chakras can also be increased by therapy with the stones, colors, aromas, physical exercises. Now this is the important part. All these seven chakras can be nourished if one purely chants the holy name of Krishna. Imagine the kind of problems. Now all that thing has already happened with our chakras. And in Kali Yuga probably everything is blocked. All seven chakras are blocked probably. But if somebody purely chants the holy names of Krishna, it gradually starts opening up this channel. Right? And because Brahma's all channels were clear, Krishna could rise from the Mooladhara Chakra with the pranas, manifesting as Paravak in his Mooladhara Chakra and come out as Vaikhari in his mouth, and Vedic scriptures are given to the world. So it's quite interesting. So you can actually make an impact in the world if you are sorted out internally. The second thing I wanted to share is the Vedic conception of sound. And I had mentioned previously, but this was a paper written in a magazine called Tattva Prakash in the year 2005 by the author called Janava Nitai Prabhu. So I am presenting that with some little understanding from the scriptures. So they say Vedantic understanding of sound is considered one of the most important principles of existence because it is both the source of matter and the key to become free from it.
And I'll quote that aphorism where it says that actually sound exists even before pradhan. So therefore, in one sense, it's non-material. It actually goes to the non-material sense. I'll come to that. So when trying to understand the four levels of sound, we must understand what is sound as defined in the scriptures. So Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, chapter 26, text 33, gives an interesting definition of sound, which says, Artha ashrayatvam shabdasya drashtur lingatvamevacha tana matratvam chanabhaso lakshanam kavayovidu. So it says three things. Artha ashrayatvam shabdasya. It conveys the idea of an object. That's what sound does. It conveys the idea of an object. Sound is not just the vibration created by meeting of two objects. That's noise. Unless sound conveys the idea of an object, the Vedic scriptures doesn't qualify it as sound. It's noise otherwise, right? So, artha ashraya, it's the shelter of the meanings. So that's what distinguishes it from noise. And in the Vedic conception, aksharas, right? All of us have read in our Hindi Varnamala, Atuksha, Akshara. So that is actually, they are the seeds of existence. The audible sound is categorized among 50 alphabets of Sanskrit, is starting from A and ending with Ksha. So hence the alphabet is called Akshara, which literally means infallible. And Akshara is also synonym for Om, which is considered as the sum of all syllables and source of all Vedic hymns. It actually is the Samambonam. And the Gita confirms that, right? Kram, what is that verse? Karma Brahmodbhavam Vidhi, right? Brahmakshara Samudbhavam. So these Vedic scriptures have come from Samudbhavam, they have come from Akshara, which is actually the Om or these combination of these syllables. So, Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan, in his commentary to Vedanta Sutra 1328, he says that the creation of all living entities, this creation of living entities means when they get the body by Brahma, proceeds from the remembrance of their form and characteristics by Lord Brahma, reciting the corresponding words. He recites corresponding words, he remembers their form and characteristics, and from this they get a physical form into this material world. Once again, they start working out their karma. So we understand the potency of sound and its meaning, how the creation takes place. And the second aspect of Bhagavatam's definition of sound that is unique is that indicates the presence of a speaker, right? It says drashtur lingatvam evacha. It actually shows the presence of a speaker or consciousness. So sound is a product of consciousness. In this sense, sound is sometimes referred to as vak or speech throughout the Vedic literatures, right? So there are a lot of details, so I will not go into that part. But just as a sankalpa, a thought, has to pass through several stages before it actually manifests into a physical reality, similarly, sound of a particular mantra also has to pass through various stages before it is fully experienced by the listener in perfection. I'll explain. I'll suggest what I mean. Sorry if it is becoming a little technical, but I'm trying to simplify it as far as possible. But it is technical. This is. So each level of sound corresponds to a level of existence. Each level of sound corresponds to a level of existence, and one's experience of sound depends upon the purity of one's consciousness. So somebody, two people might be vibrating the same set of syllables, but based on the purity of their consciousness, they will have different levels of understanding and realization. It's very simple. You go to a classroom, well rested. You are able to understand what the professor is saying, at least the English part. What he means might not still be understandable, but what he's saying. Suppose you are drunk, and you go into the classroom, you may still hear the sound, but you can't comprehend it. You can't understand it because the consciousness has blooped. You are on a lower level of existence at that time. Therefore, the sound is there, but you don't understand it. And we'll come across this when you give classes in college hostels or something, and then you speak something, and then actually people don't understand many times. Unless they digest at least 20 kg halwa, they don't understand. Every class is same for them. Sir, achha laga. Kya achha laga? Kya achha laga? He can't recollect. Because the consciousness is low. So Prabhupada was in 26 Second Avenue. And then one evening there was nobody to hear the class. Only devotees were there. So Prabhupada says, get somebody from the street. And there was a few drunkards. Prabhupada said, get them. So the devotees went outside, got these drunkards, make them sit in front of Prabhupada, and they actually collapsed. These drunkards collapsed in front of Prabhupada. Prabhupada gave a half an hour class and they said, okay, go and drop them outside. And these devotees were saying, Prabhupada, what was the benefit? Prabhupada said, the soul heard it. Now why Prabhupada, now can you and me do that? Get a bunch of drunkards, give them a class and we will not have any enthusiasm. Because our level or at least my level where I am uttering sound is not on the level of soul. Therefore it can't affect the other person on that level. When Prabhupada is talking about you are not this body, it's a simple phrase which you have heard millions of times, which we might have uttered hundreds of times. But neither we believe nor the person who hears believe. Because the refinement of consciousness is not there. It is coming from a very shallow level of existence. Therefore, especially, people do public speaking and mesmerize people, that's very easy. But to actually speak something which changes the direction of their life towards a spiritual direction, it requires tremendous amount of purity of consciousness, because then the sound has to come from a very subtler level of existence to create that impact. And I'll come to that. So these sound has these four aspects, right? We all have heard several times. Para, Pashyanti, Madhyam and Vaikari. Correct? And out of these four parts, three are inaudible. Only one is audible. And there is a reason to that. This story comes in Satpatha Brahmana. That is part of the Vedas. Every Veda has Brahmana, Arakya, Upanishad and all these kind of things. So there, this is a story of Vritrasura being dead. And all the demigods want to confirm that he's dead. Pakka mar gaya ye. So then Vayu is given this responsibility. So Vayu takes up the, I'll figure out. But I want a perk and benefit in exchange of that. And he said, if I find out, then I should be given Somras. So it's a done deal. So Vayu goes close to Vritra. He figures out that he's dead. Pakka confirmed. Comes back and tells that he's dead. And then he's offered Somras, but Indra objects. He said, he cannot drink Somras, because Indra's favorite drink or whatever. But Prajapati says, no, you both of you divide half-half. So Vayu takes the cup, and in one gulp, he drinks 3/4 of Somras. And, it's like somebody gives you a sweet rice, and then somebody, thoda sa chahiye bas, and like gulps it, almost 3/4 of the cup in his mouth. Ye kya? So Indra was like, ye kya? I allowed him half cup, he drank 3/4 and he became really angry and he said, I curse you that 3/4 of your part will become inaudible. Ki sound jo hai, wo nahi aayega. 3/4 part. So that's why this para, pashyanti and madhyama, they are inaudible, only vaikhari is audible. So this is, they say that one part of the speech was made distinct. So para operates from the transcendental level of consciousness. Right, we have four levels of consciousness: Jagrat, Swapna, Susupti, and Turiya. Not the Galka, Turiya, fourth state of consciousness. Of course, if we keep eating Galka, one day we'll probably explain Turiya state of consciousness. So this Jagrat is the Jagrat level of consciousness connected to Vaikhari Vak. The Swapna is connected to Madhyam Vak. Your Susupti is connected to Pashyanti Vak. And Turiya is connected to Paravak. It is body, mind, intelligence and soul. And all of you have experience of at least till susupti. We have that experience of susupti. Like when you go to deep sleep, really, right? After the Janmashtami festival is over and then days and days and so many sleepless nights, right? Like our Purushottam Prabhu does sleepless nights before every festival, he's like working so hard. And then after the festival is over, if you take that snap, you go into deep sleep. And when you get up, you feel refreshed. And you come and say, I had a deep sleep. How do you know? How do you know that you had a deep sleep? This is the experience of susupti. And you feel refreshed because the modes have kind of slowed down, if not totally settled. And one of the speakers was saying that how at the level of susupti, it's like you're standing in susupti and it's like across the street you see Brahman. That's your closest experience of stillness of the modes. You feel happy and refreshed, oh nice. And you come back. The Lord can be understood beyond this level of consciousness in the Turiya stage. That means even beyond this susupti you have to go. Doesn't mean that you keep sleeping deep and then one day you will reach Turiya. For that you have to wake up and go into the stage of Samadhi. But that's what Paravak is. And on the stage of Paravak, there is no distinction between the object and the sound. So when you chant Hare Krishna on this level, that's the time when you get an understanding of Krishna is non-different from his name. With all his attributes, he is manifested there. So that happens on the level of Paravak, the level of transcendental experience. And Spashyanti Vak is that which can be seen or visualized. It's on the level of intellectual and various technical terms. But Madhyam Vak is intermediate unexpressed state of sound. It refers to mental speech. At this level we experience thoughts. Like for example, you desire to fly. Then you intellectually start thinking, how can that be possible? And then once that is clarified, then you mentally start dreaming of flying. And finally you start talking about flying. Does that make sense? So para in our existence is actually on the level of very subtle desires that the soul has. That is like the, because desire is nothing but sound only. You hear your desires inside, isn't it? Like some of you might be desiring, when will this class end? Hope it lands soon. Right? So this is a desire which the mind is vibrating internally. Right, so that vibration is sound and desire is manifested as the sound internally. So these four levels, and then the Vekhari is the grossest level of speech, which we all hear comes through mouth and tongue and everything else. And Vekhari Vak represents Kriya Shakti, Madhyam Vak represents Jnana Shakti, and your Pashyanti Vak represents the Ichha Shakti, the power of will, and the Para is beyond all these things. And when you chant this Om, O, U, Ma, actually Om is composed not of just three letters, but there is a, when you chant Om, A refers to Vaikari, U refers to Madhyama, Ma refers to Pashyanti, and the nasal sound that you produce after chanting Om. Let's do that. Let's chant Om. Okay? So we'll take a deep breath and then we chant Om. And you give that, that nasal thing that comes after the Ma. Okay? Ready? Om. Thank you. Just to help you wake up and come to reality, because it's too technical. So this A is Vaikari, U is Madhyama, Ma is Pashyanti, and this nasal sound which you produce after this is the Para. And when the traditional yogis, when they chant Om, they find the Supreme Personality of God at the end of this humming sound. Now this is quite interesting. I forgot the sequence, but when a accomplished yogi chants Om, he hears different sounds eventually in his ears. So initially he chanting Om, and when he becomes perfect and pure, then there is a sound of cymbal, there is a sound of bell, then it's sound of cymbal, kartal, then there is a sound of conch. I make mess up the sequence, but the end is right. Then he hears the sound of mridanga, and finally hears the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So don't take it for granted. It's when somebody walks into a temple and we tell, chant Hare Krishna, to get that without Prabhupada, you may have to do millions of years of austerity in chanting Om to get, oh, acha, this is what I'm supposed to chant. Why? Because when he's coming closer to transcendence, the spiritual world is also emanating sound. And that sound is the holy name. So when you come closer to the spiritual existence, you start hearing the holy name of Krishna very distinctly and clear. Right? Just like in the modern parlance also, you know, you have the Big Bang Theory, and they say that the sound wave kept expanding for 350,000 years. I don't know. They have some figures, and then that was the universe, they say, that's the theory. The universe started singing. And that's all. You may never know, it could be Krishna's flute they figure out finally or whatever it is, but they have this conception that sound actually brings it. So, all this said and done, so how does that connect to us? That is the main part. So how does liberation by sound is possible? In the Vedanta Sutra 2.4.4, it states, Tat purvakatvad vachaha, which means that vak existed before the pradhan. Pradhan is the root of the material manifestation. Prior to this is vak. Thus the vak is non-material. For this reason, we find the Vedanta Sutra the following statement, anavritti shabdat, liberation by sound. Like our Nityananchan Prabhu's initiative, liberation by sound. It's a very profound thing. If people actually understand what we are trying to help them with, it's very profound. Anavritti shabdat. Since sound is the non-material source of the material manifestation, it is the key by which we can become free from bondage. It is the thread-like link between the material and the spiritual realms. Therefore, you have seen that picture where there is a jiva who is jumping off the material world, going into the spiritual world, and they have a bead bag in hand. Right? You have seen that picture. Prabhupada's in Hindi Journey of Self-Discovery book, that cover picture used to come. It is the sound which actually connects the material and the spiritual realms. So sound is originally responsible for material desires, and sound vibration only can affect your liberation from this world also. Like if you start hearing some old 1970-80 Bollywood song. I'll not sing that here now. Patriotic song. What kind of desire comes in you? Goosebumps, or he's saying no desire comes. But you know, generally who is patriotic, had been patriotic, when he hears all this, "Ae mere watan ke log," and all this, you know, some blood starts boiling, and you start hatefully looking towards the western direction, and you know, whatever may happen. Or you hear some romantic blues or a melody, and then you know, you kind of start wafting on your mental plane. So sound actually creates desires. And therefore, if you change the quality of the sound, your desires will start changing. And that's what will actually take you out of this material existence, because it is the desire which keeps you here, because that is the only thing that the soul can do in this material existence. Desire. Nothing else. So if you can change that, then the journey of the soul out of this material existence is possible. So the tool that we utilize in order to help the soul to chant or to focus on the sound is our old friend, the mind, oldest friend or enemy, whatever you want to say. And all the time we have always looked upon mind as the troublemaker. Iski wajah se sab gadbad chal raha hai. I would like to just present a different purview. I say, see him as a troubled child in a family who needs help. And who are the residents of your family? Indriyani parani ahur, indriyabhya paramam mana, manasastu parabuddhir, yo buddhe paratastu saha. There is senses, there is a mind, there is intelligence, and there is a soul. Mind is troubled So let senses, intelligence and soul come and help this mind. Right? If somebody is troubled in your family, naturally you will come forward and help him. So we have to use our senses, intelligence and the soul to help the mind rectify its tendencies which have been incorporated in because of excessive exposure to sense gratification since time immemorial. And that's not an overnight job. That's not an overnight job. It requires a lot of hard work. And the other thing that I would like to bring to your notice is, what is 7.4? Bhumir, Apo, Analo, Vayu, Kama, Mano, Buddhir, Evacha, Ahankaram, Itiyam, Manne, Bhinna, Prakriti, Rashtadha. So who are the closest neighbors to the mind? You know, sometimes a brahmachari is having difficulty with this. That's so the people who are closest to him goes and talk to him. So who is the closest to the mind? Intelligence and? Who is the other side? Kham. Akash, which is actually carrier of sound. These two people can play the most significant role in helping the mind. If you utilize sound properly, mind is subtle. Sound is still in your axis. You can start influencing the sound, influencing the mind through sound. And mind does listen to the sound. That's mind's function actually. It keeps listening inside. Right? That's why Prahlad Maharaj says, Maya manasrajati karma mayam baliya. Mind contemplates itself and creates desires. This is very complex. Mind even contemplates itself and keeps creating multitudes of desires. So when we use ether, the sound, and the intelligence to help the mind starts gradually changing. So the sound is the holy name of Krishna. Intelligence is Srimad Bhagavatam. Intelligence is nourished with Srimad Bhagavatam. So when you have these two things, Prabhupada was genius. He is genius. He gave the holy name of Krishna and he gave the Srimad Bhagavatam to capture the mind. Don't attack it. Surround it. So that he happily surrenders to what you want to do with it. So, these four, and this coming to earth, water, fire, air, ether. Actually, basically, when we chant Hare Krishna, if any one of your family members is not paying attention to the mind will get distracted. The senses have to be there to assist the mind. The intelligence has to be there to assist the mind. The soul has to be there to assist the mind. So how do the senses help the mind during chanting? You sit in a proper posture. You breathe properly. If you become lousy, slouchy and all that stuff, it's very easy for the mind to escape. Has it happened? Did it happen today morning? We just slouched a little bit. You know, it's like we start like this. With all, both hands out. And then after the first round, one hand comes like this. Right? And then the second hand holds the first hand. As if the beat bag is running somewhere. But this hand starts holding the first hand. And then, you know, your religion might start changing. You start going down and you don't know what you're doing. And it literally happened right in this temple hall that somebody crashed into the ground. Boom. I was like, what happened? He actually hit the success bar. You know, he really hit himself hard on the ground because he might be a little tired or whatever. But the senses has to help the mind. You can't be just looking anywhere, thinking about food and this and that and still expect that the mind will focus on chanting. And if there is any thought ahead of the holy name, that means we are not hearing Krishna's name. It cannot go into the background. It has to be a front field drive. It has to be in the forefront. It has to be in the forefront. It has to be in the forefront. We clearly hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And even the material elements, earth, the food that you eat, water, the liquids that you drink, or the bath that you take with cold shower in the morning or hot shower in the morning, whatever it is. the fire, that the forms that you see, air, pranayama might help you. All these things have to be channelized to help this mind. Only then can we expect it to focus. If we just ask the mind, chal tu samhal le, you, oh mind, just focus on the holy name and rest, everything is not with the mind to help him, it's not going to happen. It's not a matter of time. It may be decades also. It's not going to happen. Because the mind has been what it is since days of Brahma. So few decades is not going to make any impact on it. If we don't do the science properly. Right? So, I'll end with this. When Jiv Goswami says that, he explains that why in spite of chanting for so long, the heart doesn't change. The reason is, our chanting still remains on the Vaikhari platform. And as long as the chanting remains on Vaikhari platform, it doesn't influence the desires which are at the level of the soul, which is on the Para platform. Only when you bring your chanting deeper, that it starts affecting your desires. And that's where change begins to happen. Otherwise, we can keep on chanting on a Vaikhari plane and not experience the change. And Jiva Goswami Pad says, the reason why you are not able to pull that sound below is because you are still allowing prajalpa to enter your ears, which is materialistic desires, and therefore the para level of existence just doesn't manifest. So practical thing, if we want to chant attentively, affectionately and with absorption, we have to somehow or other get rid of this tendency to do prajalpa. Not just prajalpa. Tendency to do prajalpa. Because even if you don't speak out, your mind keeps the track on of prajalpa. That has to stop. We have to learn the art of appreciation. We have to learn the art of forgiveness. And you can hang around with Rudranath Prabhu to learn the art of appreciation. He can appreciate a stone also. He can appreciate anybody. Right? Even if you have made the biggest mistake, still he can appreciate you and show you the potential in you. So when we develop this kind of... it's a big science, Prabhus. It's a big science. The journey has not yet ended. I won't be surprised if it would not have begun for now, for many of us. It's a big struggle actually, to be able to change this para level of existence where the soul is actually sitting, where the desires have to change and things like that. And the association of devotees is the most powerful thing that can happen. That's why I was just reflecting when the Shastra says, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi. What does that mean? That means that the sound which comes because the association of a sadhu in that lava is coming from a para level. Therefore, it directly goes and hits the level of desires in your heart and the change begins. But if our preaching, if our chanting is on Vaikhari, our preaching will also be on Vaikhari. And the results will also be on Vaikhari. They will be all very superfluous. We may have numbers without quality. So if we want to make an impact in the world, we have to actually go deeper in the chanting of the holy names, in the study of our shastras, and affect a deeper level of existence from where, when that sound vibration comes out once again, it will have an impact and change the life of people for good. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthara Shrimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai. Tai Gaur Premanande.